Hey, come here. Come a little closer to the speaker. Hey, happy Valentine's Day.
Love, exciting and new.
Oh, God.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Uh-huh.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Happy Valentine's Day to you and yours. All of your things. Happy Valentine's Day to you and you. You get a car and you get a car. It's the day of love. Whether you have a significant person in your life or not, it's the day of love. Everybody should be in love with something. Maybe your dog, maybe your cat, maybe a person, maybe food. Maybe alcohol. Be in love with something. Be in love with life. Oh my God. Be in love with life. Buy one of those cards. One of those Hallmark cards that tell other people that you love them without you actually having to say it. You just sign your name. That's love. That is love. I think I told you a story. I was, I didn't have a great relationship with my father. Oh, this is going to get personal. And whenever it was his birthday, he was a nice man and we got along, but I wasn't in love with him, so to speak. He wasn't like a great father. I probably was a horrible son. I remember going to the greeting card store, CVS, all the time when it was his birthday. I wanted to get him a card for his birthday. I used to agonize in the card section for hours. I would not buy a card that didn't say the right stuff on it. I couldn't go for the "I love you, you're the greatest dad." I couldn't buy those. I had to find cards that just said "Happy birthday, Ron." It's funny how in life we can be so dishonest, so deceitful, so ridiculous, but when it comes to a greeting card, nah, I've got to say exactly what's on my mind. Those words that somebody else wrote have got to really be what's inside my heart. It's so stupid. And of course, you got to get flowers. Flowers, man. That's the big day for all the florists, Valentine's Day. What could be a better gift for the person you love? Giving them something that will die within a few days. Oh, that makes sense. I don't give flowers on Valentine's Day. I give houseplants because they last a little bit longer. If you water them like you water a plant with your love, they will go on forever. Well, I don't know who you are. I have no idea who you are, but I'm just warning you, you better take care of Valentine's Day. You better do it, and you better do it fast. Because today is the day you better give that gift of love. And let me tell you something, ladies, just because you tend to be the recipient on Valentine's Day, that's not good enough. I'm not happy with you. You must return your love accordingly. You get the guy something. Maybe it can't be flowers. I don't know what you get a guy. Hey, I'm a guy and I don't know what you get a guy, okay? I know what most men want. You know what they want. Give it to them. Just close your eyes. Don't move. Let them have it. You know, just seriously, it's all they want. They don't want a pen and pencil set. They don't want one of your famous home-cooked meals. They don't want a card. Two things men would actually want for Valentine's Day. One is sex. and the other is a bottle of aspirin. Beyond that, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know how to help you. I'll tell you one thing. Whenever you get a gift for a guy, don't bother wrapping it. There's no point. They don't care. They don't care. Nobody cares about wrapping stuff. Females do. Females care. They want it. The wrapping's more important than what's inside. Did you ever give a female a gift, a wrapped gift? They don't open it right away. They look at it and go, oh, they hold it to their bosom, which is where you should be holding gifts. They hold it to their bosom like, oh, this is so sweet. And you feel like saying, well, open it, open it. I didn't give you an empty box wrapped up. Open the thing. Then they open it up and it's not as exciting. You know, oh, thank you. This is very nice. You were more excited when it was wrapped up. I really think you like the box with the wrapping and nothing inside. You're like a child that would rather bang on a pot and pan than get a dog or get a toy. You're just interested in the thing, not what's in the thing. Guys are the opposite. Don't wrap it. It doesn't matter. They'll unwrap it before you even give it to them. It's like sex. They unwrap things with their eyes. Now, I don't mean to make a big point between the difference in sexes and how they receive gifts. But I guess I am doing that, so there you have it. But no matter whether you're a male or a female, you're all adorable. You're just adorable. We're all people. We just have different genitalia. That's all. I mean, you know, one of the sexes is very nice. The other is very difficult. That's all I'm saying. I'm not going to say which is which. All I'm going to tell you is, apparently from what I've read, which is obviously, you know, the truth, from what I've read, there are more women than there are men. So I don't think I have to say anything more than that, guys. Just shut up. Be nice. Be respectful. Be nice. Shut up, and you'll have the life of lovely. You'll be treated beautifully. You'll be loved, adored. Just be nice and respectful. That's all they want, guys. It's so simple, and you never get it. You never, ever get it. You're so into yourself. You've got to live outside of yourself for them. And then you're happy forever. They'll talk to you nicely. They'll love you. They'll give you the physical contact which you desire. All you got to do is be pleasant, respectful, pay attention. That's all. It's so freaking simple. Why do they write books about this? I've just said it like in a sentence. And what do women want? That's what they want. They want you to be respectful and nice and attentive. Show them that they know, you know that they're there. That's all. And what do women want? That's all. That's all they want. What do men want? I think we went through this already. I guarantee you, man. Just do those things. She'll be nice to you forever. And that's all. What can women do to get the attention of a man? I think you already know. I think you already do it. Okay, I'm just repeating myself, apparently. Speaking of repeating yourself, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I'm going to go there. I'm going to go there. Donald Trump has done something that has annoyed me again. I don't always talk about it. It happens on a daily basis. I don't always bring it up on this show, but something really annoying now. Apparently, Donald Trump went out and bought himself a $50,000 golf simulator and installed it into the White House so he can play golf without even leaving the White House. This man is obsessed with golf and tanning, and somehow your skin comes out orange. I don't get that. But he's obsessed with these things. Doesn't want a dog. One of the few people, families in the White House that don't have a dog. And when questioned recently about why he doesn't have a dog in the White House, as almost everybody else did, does it mean that you're not an animal lover? And Trump actually said, I don't really care. I don't really care. You know, if I had a dog, I'd have to walk the dog every day, and give it attention. Oh, yeah, that's true, Don. You're right. If you had a dog, the focus would be off of you sometimes, and you'd have to do things for something else that's other than you. You're right. You just expose yourself. You expose yourself 24 hours a day. It's the American people that just give you so much of a pass. It's unbelievable. What happened? Donald Trump plays golf all the time. They call it executive time. That's me time, and his whole life has been me time. Every weekend, just about, Donald Trump goes down to his Florida golf resort. Actually may conduct some business there once in a while, but definitely gets in 2 days of golf almost every single weekend. When he travels, he goes to golf clubs all over the world. This man plays golf more than the guy that invented golf. Here's the thing that bothers me about that, besides the fact that he spends a lot of time playing golf. Look, when you've got a high-stress job like that, because you made it stressful yourself, I guess you got to have some type of a thing to bring it down a notch, and for him, that's golf. But if you're going to do that, Don, then don't say things previous to that that make you a hypocrite. For example, this is Donald Trump when he was running for president, about golf and about Obama.
Obama, it was reported today, played 250 rounds of golf.
Everything's executive order because he doesn't have enough time because he's playing so much golf.
Obama ought to get off the golf course and get down there.
I'm going to be working for you. I'm not going to have time to go play golf.
He played more golf last year than Tiger Woods.
I'm going to be working with you, for you. I'm sorry. He's going to be working for you. I won't have time to play golf. One of the lies, man. One of the lies. Putting Obama down for playing a lot of golf. Are you serious? Did you know that would be the most ridiculous thing you've probably ever said? Be careful, Don. Almost everything you accuse other people of doing, you do more. Obama does everything by executive order. That's because he can't get anything done. Don, you just described yourself and your presidency tenfold. You see, Don, all this makes you look stupid. And when it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. You're stupid. Happy Valentine's Day.
Exciting and new. Come aboard. We're expecting you.
Yeah, because you got a reservation on the boat. What, are you kidding me? Of course they're expecting you. Well, that's how that works, isn't it? Do you know who sang who in this clip and who on the Love Boat show? Do you remember the Love Boat show, do you? One of the worst shows on television, but people liked it for some reason. Do you know who sings that theme song? I'll give you 10 seconds. Who sings the theme song to the Love Boat? Don't Google it. Don't Google it because it doesn't matter because I can't hear your response. You're not impressing anybody. Do you know, within your heart, who sang the theme to the Love Boat? Who was that? I'll give you 5 more seconds before I tell you. I venture to say most of you don't know. Time's up. It was Jack Jones. I've never heard of him, you're probably saying. Well, this is what we're talking about when we say that nobody knows what's going on unless they live during that particular era. That's all. You're not old enough to know who Jack Jones is. If you lived back in the 70s, you would know who Jack Jones was. He was a popular singer amongst those, usually amongst those that were even older. If you were born after the Love Boat, you have no idea even what the Love Boat is. You don't know. You think it was some kind of porno whack job voyage or something, you know, like, you know, a bunch of swingers getting on a boat and trading sex partners. That wasn't what the Love Boat was. It was a stupid television show. See, I don't know much about the new generation because I am basically mentally vapid now. For a long time, I thought Cardi B was a vitamin that you take in order to increase your testosterone levels. Having trouble with the women? Have you found that you've been lackluster and not much energy these days? You need Cardi B. I thought that's what that was. I thought it was one of the Spice Girls. I don't know why. I didn't know if it was Posh Spice or Cinnamon Spice or Vanilla Spice or what kind of spice it was. Cumin? Allspice? I don't know. I don't know what it is. I don't follow that stuff. Now they're female rappers, which is fine. I didn't think there should be any male rappers. Although back in the 60s, there were people called beatniks. They existed in smoke-filled rooms, and when they liked something, they snapped their fingers rather than applauded. It was an odd bunch of people. Most of you don't know who they are. And they had poetry jams where these people would stand up in front of smoke-filled, crowded rooms and recite poetry. How boring can that be? And it was terrifically boring. And when someone liked a poem, that it was like open mic poetry night. Really, nothing can put you to sleep faster than that. And then rap came along not too many years ago. And to me, it's poetry night again. It's poetry night. Like, wow. It's poetry night, only we talk about hurting people and killing cops. I mean, for the most part, that's gangsta. Gangsta rap. Now rap has kind of become quite popular. Broadway show named after it, or about it, or rap the whole show. I mean, it's become popular again. But poetry, I will never. I can't. I will never listen to poetry again. I know that songs are basically poetry, but I don't listen to the words. Can't understand them anyway. Who listens to words in a song? You hear little phrases in the song that you sing along with. You know, when you sing along to a song, it's basically, and I love her. You know, so you just know like a phrase in the song and you sing that out real loud because you know those are the words of that. The rest of it, you're not sure what the words are because you just can't understand them. That's music to me. It's the song. It's not the words. The lyrics are secondary. I used to, you know, songwriters, you know, songwriting teams where one wrote the lyrics and one wrote the melody. I always thought that the genius was the one that wrote the melody. That's the stuff that bakes in my head that I'm singing to myself day and night. And when I'm singing it to myself, I'm not singing the words. I'm going, and I love her so. I don't remember the words. I remember the song. I remember the tune vividly to the point where it's driving me nuts. I can't get to sleep. That tune is like baked in my head. That's the genius. The lyricist? Give me a break. What? You wrote down words to fit to the music or whatever. That's not a big deal. I write down words all day. I don't write music, but I write down words. I never thought that a lyricist was a big deal. It's like they hooked on to a guy that wrote music and they were successful accordingly. No. Oh, did you hear the words to that song? No, I didn't. I can't understand them. I can't. Some of the singers are horrible. I can't hear the rap. Rap is just like lyrics. And I can't even understand those.
went down to the bed and I told him, I said, and shave me, baby, all my life. What did you say? What did you just say? Going back in time, there were Bob Dylan. No one ever understood what he was saying. They thought he was a musical genius. He wasn't a musical genius. I couldn't understand a word the guy said. And home went in high. We went down the stairs. And we moved it fine. But I tell sounds like some type of nasal Jewish thing. I mean, sounds like you're in synagogue praying. Now, I'm not being racist. I'm just a comedy show. Get over it. Then there was Joe Cocker, who would stand in front of a microphone, and the songs were very nice, but I couldn't understand a word he was saying. My God, I couldn't understand a word of it. I don't know. I don't think it's a good song if you can't understand the words. I don't understand the point. People belaboring with these incredibly deep messages of these sayings of incredible life importance, and somehow when they reach a melody, you can't understand what they're saying. Anyway, how are you? How you doing? Okay, here's the irony of today's show. Seems to be a lot of irony involved in these shows these days. It's Valentine's Day. We're talking about love, living through the heart. And by the way, don't make decisions with your heart. That's not what the heart is for. The heart is supposed to be pumping the blood, literally. Don't make decisions. You make decisions through your head, and you show emotion through your heart. If you don't get that straight, then you're doomed. You're just doomed. So it's the day of the heart. So I thought, in my infinite wisdom, that we would have a guest on to talk about the heart and heart disease. I'm serious. I don't understand me either. I do not understand me either or either, whichever way you wish to say that. But it is fascinating because I have learned, because this is National Heart Month, because it's February, and that's when Valentine's Day is. A nice little marketing deal. Let everybody know about heart disease. But they're coming out with stuff every day that actually makes you, like, live with it, and you're good. You're good. So let's speak to our guest. Dr. Charles Davidson joins us. He's a clinical chief of cardiology at Northwestern Medicine Blum Cardiovascular Institute. And today we're talking about cardiovascular disease and some new methods that have been employed in a way. This is a non-invasive method, I understand.
Non-surgical.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And February is actually Heart Health Month. Every medical concern has its own month, obviously. So February is this. Who's most likely to suffer from heart attacks, and how would you know? What are the risk factors involved?
So February, for Valentine's Day, is always a good time to be thinking about your heart.
Yeah, I guess so.
The rest of the year, hopefully, as well. But,
makes sense. Makes sense.
So happy Valentine's Day to everybody. Yeah. But the when we talk about coronary artery disease, that's where we really can identify risk factors for blocked arteries in the heart. Mm-hmm. And some of the primary risk factors we concern ourselves with is patients that have diabetes, patients that are smokers, mm-hmm. high blood pressure, people with high cholesterol. Now, some of these risk factors can be modified by diet, exercise, mm-hmm. and cholesterol medications or mm-hmm. blood pressure medications. Obviously, some are not modifiable, and those are the genetic components that you may or may not be born with. And we, unfortunately or fortunately, can't change our parents and our hereditary, but we can modify those other risk factors. And it's very important that if you have those risk factors, that you're on the proper medications and modifying your diet and exercise regimens to kind of stack as much as you can the odds in your favor. And if you do, then the risk of heart attacks goes down dramatically, and with that, the risk of stroke as well.
It's kind of interesting to me because when you get older, you go to the doctor more frequently or at all, and your situation is diagnosed. And if you have a risk of heart disease or cholesterol problems or high blood pressure, it's treated accordingly by medication. It seems to be the younger people that are living without knowing what they're living with until they get into this regimen later in life.
No, it's a great observation. I think for many reasons, and some of which in people's youth, they have some ability to feel infallible and don't necessarily look after some of these risk factors until it becomes more obvious that they manifest with symptoms, and people then decide to do something about it. But what we'd love to do and what we've been trying to do is get these initiatives out to younger people to realize if you have high blood pressure, let's treat it. If you're overweight, if you're smoking in particular, let's stop that very early. There's nothing good happening from that.
Yeah.
You're 20 times more likely to have a heart problem with smoking than if you don't smoke. And it's what's interesting to me is that people that have a problem and continue to smoke afterwards. But there's things that can be done earlier, but it doesn't seem to get click in people's head till a little bit later in life to actually start treating this, when often the disease process has already begun to manifest itself.
Right.
And prevention earlier would have saved any deal that they had to have later in life.
Now, what is the difference between heart valve disease and heart disease, or is it the same?
So heart disease, typically, it's either valvular or coronary disease. And the number one killer in the United States is coronary disease, and that's the one that's most commonly spoken about. But really, valvular heart disease is very common in America and worldwide. And some forms of valve disease occur as a congenital problem. In other words, you're born with it. But many develop as people age. Mm-hmm. And the valves, what they do is regulate, essentially, blood flow in the heart. It's just like plumbing in your house. We think of ourselves as interventional cardiologists as kind of glorified plumbers, if you will, because we're regulating blood flow in the heart, either through the arteries or through the valves. And the valves kind of open and close to regulate that blood flow throughout the body. And at times, they can become diseased when then they either leak too much, that means blood supposed to be going forward is going backward, that's called regurgitation, or they're blocked up when blood can't go forward, and that's called stenosis.
Mm.
We now have treatments for those that don't require open heart surgery, where in the past, severe forms of those diseases were only treated by open heart surgery because medicines are often ineffective when it becomes severe.
Wow. Is open heart surgery the same as bypass surgery?
So the bypass surgery would be open heart surgery for artery blockages, and then valve replacement or valve repair would be open heart surgery for valvular disease.
So we're talking,
as I said, with valve disease, particularly aortic valve disease, is one we should talk about, because there's been really a revolution in the last 5-10 years in aortic valve disease, where people with blocked aortic valves, called aortic stenosis, blood couldn't exit the heart.
Right.
We know when that occurs, there's about a 50% chance of dying within 2 years, and medications don't affect that. And so the only treatment that was available, was open heart surgery.
Right.
Now we have ways of putting new valves in through a leg artery, and patients are up and around the same day and often home in a day or two. And the results seem to be better than surgery in various populations of patients. And this has really helped to extend the life of people and improve their quality of life.
Wow. Oh, that's a big wow. See, whenever
that is a big wow.
It's
been huge. I'm telling you, for these people, a lot of them didn't have surgical options because they were maybe were too old at the time to undergo surgery, and so they were really faced with a diagnosis that was going to limit their life. I had a woman I did 9 years ago, was one of our very first, and now she's 110 years old and as sharp and bright as can be. And so, as the population ages, people are developing valve disease, and now we have ways of extending their life and letting them enjoy their great grandchildren and grandchildren.
Right.
And we're extending it now down to younger patients because the results have been so good with the elderly when we first started out.
Yeah. See, that's the scary part is with heart disease and other things, when you need major operations when you're elderly, you know, you keep your fingers crossed because they're major operations and the recuperation and the infection and that kind of thing. So it's just, it's miraculous that, I mean, that just changes everything, especially for the elderly.
It's been a game changer. And you know, what we're seeing now, and I see a lot in the hospitals, patients now that develop valve disease in their 50s and 60s, you know, they've read about the treatments that are non-surgical, and they're coming in and saying, you know, I really don't want to go through surgery if I can get similar results. And with aortic valve disease, we've been able to achieve that. And now we're moving into the other valves with mitral valve disease and tricuspid valve disease. Typically, we start out with the high-risk patients, as you alluded to, people that may have other comorbidities or are older, and surgery wouldn't be the best option. But as the results become more durable and more predictable, we've been able to migrate that slowly into the more general population.
It's good stuff. I'm glad we had this talk because the more that the public is educated, the more they can manage their own bodies. And I've always said on this show, second opinions are the hilt, where one doctor may know something that the other doctor doesn't know. Let me ask you a quick question. It has little to do with it, or actually a lot. When you go for a second opinion on something major or how to treat something major, does the second doctor require to see the first doctor's assessment, or can you go in blind with the second doctor so that they can't be swayed with their opinion?
That's an excellent question, and I encourage patients to do it whatever way they feel best about
okay.
it. I would say that if you've had testing done
yes.
by another physician, rather than having all that testing repeated, it's very helpful to receive the images and the results of the test so that you can review those without necessarily going back on it. But I think a doctor that offers a lot of second opinions, good at second opinions, is going to give you an independent evaluation, regardless of whether they receive the records or not. I agree with you wholeheartedly that second opinions are critical. There are lots of choices now that weren't available even a few years ago, and not all of those are even known by our medical community. So when patients get diagnosed with heart disease, seek a second opinion. Get more information. Go online. Be an educated consumer for your health. Those, to me, are the best patients, and hopefully that's the way you receive the best outcomes.
Great. If anybody has any concerns or questions along these lines, where would they go to get them answered?
We have a nice website. It's heart.nmnorthwesternmedicine.org. There's patient stories. There's all of the new devices that we have and trials available on there. There's some education about different disease states and treatments, and I think patients will hopefully find that a nice educational piece.
Dr. Davidson, you've been a wealth of information. This has been pretty good, and I appreciate it, and the best to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for taking the time. It was my pleasure to speak with you today.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was great. I told you it'd be good. It's good news. It's good stuff. Hey, we're out of time for today, and I know you have things to do. I don't know if you're listening on Valentine's Day, or maybe it just was Valentine's Day, or maybe it's Christmas. I have no freaking idea what the hell's going on with you. But I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. Will you join me then? Can we make a date on Valentine's Day today? Can we make a date for tomorrow? Doesn't have to be any particular time. I'm always here with a brand new show every weekday. That sounded like a little commercial for me, and it was. I wish you peace.